Welcome to the Noble Eight Podcast, Ape Reality. I'm Tom Barbalay, and today I'm doing a bit of a retro thing. I'm actually recording this podcast in stereo, primarily because I wanted to conclude the podcast with a little recording that I'd done for BiotaLive, but will never actually make the BiotaLive feed. I find with some of the compositions, and really composition is the wrong term, I'm really just remixing the BiotaLive theme, but some of the remixes that I do, some of the instrumental interpolations that I do are very stereophonic, and unfortunately just don't work well in a mono format. So I thought, to kind of hark back to earlier Ape Realities, I would record this episode in stereo and to a relatively higher quality. But part of the reason with regards to this BiotaLive theme is that roughly half the people that listen to this podcast listen to BiotaLive. And it strikes me as quite strange, particularly because I put far more effort in BiotaLive on a kind of twice monthly or every other week basis. Part of that is to do with the kind of eclectic format of Ape Reality, perhaps the length, but also the ability to kind of throw around a wide variety of ideas. And this is what I wanted to do today. I wanted to record an Ape Reality specifically with regards to a chapter I'm writing currently. It does not have a book. Per, I guess if you've been following the past 18 months, you'll realize that I do write chapters for books that never get published, and then chapters are needed for various books that are getting published, so it somehow zero sums in a kind of cosmic way over a long period of time, that once you've written a couple of chapters, they will eventually get sucked into whatever book project seems to be coming. However, this chapter is written on the idea of the smart poor, and this is something that I think has come through particularly my interview with Mark Badeau, or really a BiotaLive kind of chat discussion with Mark Badeau, also to a lesser extent my conversation with Larry Yeager, and just the sense that these are relatively powerful people in the artificial life community who are, in some regard, reinforcing a kind of intellectual ghetto mentality, which I do associate very heavily with regards to rap music, which ironically has another venting irony because this is also the way I conclude today's podcast. So all these things came together in a chapter that I'm writing currently about the ideas of intellectual ghettos and how really these things can become transformative movements. Now, what interests me here, obviously, is the situations in the artificial life community which result in a kind of Groundhog Day mentality, like, oh no, mysteriously the same stuff is happening again that occurred 10 years ago, that occurred 20 years ago. And I think part of this is with regards to software engineering. I think software engineers have been historically extraordinarily passive. Our organization that is represented as IEEE in the US, for example, has done next to nothing with regards to representing us almost in a kind of union-like fashion, or at least a, you know, we are representing X number of employees, or this kind of mentality, which you see with all other industries in the US, all other industries here and internationally tend to have large-scale either lobbying or infrastructure prodding organizations that actually reinforce the productive need for these industries to exist. And unfortunately, software engineering just doesn't have that. It has large-scale companies which, you know, in almost all parts, fail to actually represent the individual components. And certainly as artificial life exists as Mark Badeau said, a very fringe, abstract part of this whole mess, we are, in some regard, even more part of the thrown to the wolves component. And I certainly think this is being an artificial life developer who's not generated any income from artificial life development for a number of years. This is the ideal time to start addressing these issues in a very proactive way, and certainly this chapter with regards to the smart poor is part of that, because I think on some level there is just some acceptance both internally and externally in terms of internally within the artificial life community and also how the artificial life community is observed externally that this is just an acceptable narrative. That ultimately what exists within the artificial life community does have, you know, productive use in industry. And certainly when I was talking with Mark Badeau, I made the point with regards to how artificial life is being used, my Noble Ape stuff is being used by Apple and Intel, and he made the point that, yes, well, it's just an adjunct to things. Well, Java is an adjunct to things. Linux is an adjunct to things. These are certainly, in some part, intellectual entities that have been very successfully represented, although in both cases really for commercial ends, and really I think in the case of, you know, both Linux and Java, probably not ideally for those who are you know, well suited in terms of the development. We'll have Gerald de Jong on the next BiotaLive, shout out to Gerald, to discuss this even more, particularly with regards to the Java example, because he's certainly very versed with regards to the Java community. So this is this idea of the smart poor, and here I am returning to my father. For my early childhood, was a, as I've said in previous BiotaLives, was a Marx theorist. He went and interviewed a number of union leaders in Australia, and my childhood was spent kind of in the company of these union leaders, observing the way that they interacted and the positions of power that they were in and how they motivated social change without having a relatively large financial power base, although arguably through union dues, unions do get a certain degree of power, but they certainly weren't in the power, privilege, or prestige position. And I think there's something to be learnt through these interactions, particularly with regards to things like the artificial life community, but also with regards to a number of abstract technology entities, and I think you're podcasting as well. This really impacted my social perspective with regards to these kind of issues, although I find in the US there really is no, there's no left in the US. I mean, the left that exists in the US has no connection to the international left, and my father has interesting stories associated with that too. Coming to the US with this kind of background in social and sociological phenomena, you really do feel a bit like an orphan. Here I'm talking to absolutely no one. I think there are certain components of the theories associated with this that can be very powerful with regards to impacting change. And obviously it needs a completely new perspective, but this is what I'm writing about with this idea of the smart poor. And I think it's something that all, all folks involved with technology could get something out of, but certainly I want to use as a kind of proactive movement with regards to the artificial life community in terms of actually changing some of the standing problems that seem to be reoccurring. And certainly I come through the Larry Yeager and Mark Prideaux interviews in particular in this regard. Although I want to say the Zan Gill interview was also very interesting. I mean, I think what I got from Larry Yeager was we spent the first half talking about what a artificial life curriculum would look like, what the core components of artificial life should be, and then Larry went on to say that he didn't think that an artificial life core curriculum should be taught formally, which I found very curious and paradoxical. And when I had Zan Gill on, the primary reason was to actually move her out of her comfort zone and start addressing the basic issues about how you actually apply artificial life simulation principles to real-world problems. And I think here, Freeman Dyson is an interesting example, because what Freeman Dyson says explicitly is that you need a far greater gradient of simulation, you need a far greater quality of simulation in order to start solving problems in the real world with computer simulations, and this is ultimately a positive challenge. I did talk a lot earlier in the Ape Reality series with regards to Brig Kleiss's challenge and how that had positive impacts on artificial life, and I think what Freeman Dyson is saying here is fundamentally supportive of what we're trying to do with the kind of long-term goals of artificial life and simulation sciences. I also wanted to talk a little bit candidly about my discussions with Justin Lyon, because I talk very briefly and bite alive about that, but let me just lay this out in a kind of more abstract sense, because I found it very fascinating at the time, and it certainly kind of pushed my direction of thinking, and I'm slightly freer to talk more candidly at Ape Realities than I am bite alive, so I wanted to put this out there in the Ape Reality community first. So what Justin portrays is basically a society where all the politicians and lawyers have been eliminated. That's basically the way to say it without any polite caveatry to any of that. But that's the reality in contemporary Iraq, that the lawyers and politicians were the ones that were picked off relatively quickly. They either got out of Iraq or, you know, they didn't survive. And what is left in this kind of brutalized society are people who are fundamentally engineers and scientists that have no primary value to insurgent groups or whatever you want to call them. They're just people that go about their day-to-day jobs, and occasionally, as these things happen, are, you know, caught in the crossfire, and the whole situation is really bleak. I don't want to make light of any of these components. But the point that Justin made was that the people that are left over to create the new government are fundamentally engineers and scientists, and certainly if you look at the bios of the people that are left in the Iraqi government, that is what they are. They are also moving very quickly away from just being mouthpieces of, on one extreme, perhaps Iran, and on the other extreme, perhaps the US. So what you see in contemporary Iraq isn't very well reported, certainly in the US. I'm not sure what the rest of the world reports. But it was interesting having contact with Justin, because he is a primary person who's, you know, he has real contact in the current situation. I want to put caveats with regards to this, that this is my only source of this information. But the idea that a group of kind of engineering philosophers or philosopher scientists are in fact constructing a country in Iraq and are using ideas of simulation methodology, particularly with regards to legislation and implementation, really sent me in a variety of different directions in terms of my own thinking. But I think it's an interesting message that, you know, whilst we have looked historically, and this is the narrative with regards to the smart poor as being the kind of intellectual underclass of a ever brutalizing, you know, financial, legal, social hierarchy. Maybe what Justin portrays in this very strange example is a sense that there is potential for the ideas and the means that we hold. Certainly, as these ideas have been devalued by all, including various insurgent groups, that, you know, there may actually be something to it. I want to get Justin on the line. I want to have the ability to talk to him in real time, candidly, in order to get a real sense of what he meant. I mean, there was a lot of idiom, basically, in our correspondence. It was via chat. I have read through it repeatedly to try and see if, you know, I'm extracting more of my own kind of innuendo through what was said. You know, I reinforced what he was saying in my responses, so that kind of added to the chat in that regard. But it would be nice to have the ability to talk to Justin sometime in the future just to get his true sense of what is actually going on. And with regards to this, I want to say, please get in contact, tom@nobleape.com. I really am amazed by the number of people that listen to this on a regular basis, and I do want to put out more of these kind of abstract ramblings. And from one war zone to another, or at least perhaps from one real and actual war zone to a theoretical war zone, or at least a war zone for a period of time, I wanted to conclude this Ape Reality with a Biota Live intro that will never make the light of day. This is Tom Barbalay, currently in Las Vegas, Nevada, signing out. There may not be a mail out based on the trip to Australia, but you'll certainly hear some audio content from me in Australia. It's going to be a very amazing, very empowering and impactful trip. And as I've been saying candidly, it's going to right a number of wrongs. So this is Tom Barbalay, Ape Reality, signing out. You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.